Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Leaders Call to Adventure, the show for those that take the road less traveled. I'm Lori Ferentz. This episode features a conversation with Sylvia Warren, executive coach and travel shaman. Yeah, bet you haven't heard those two things mentioned together in terms of one person. Sylvia's a pretty interesting and special lady. Very wise woman. And I spoke to her a few years back about an aspect of her work called the Wild Wisdom Journeys, which really hadn't found their ground or an audience for that matter. And she was wondering what to do with them. Well, things evolved, let's just put it that way. And I think you'll find the process of that evolution to be very interesting and inspiring.
When we had that conversation, I was kind of at the juncture of trying to figure out who really could, you know, where I could find the right audience for the journeys. And I wasn't sure that it was my current client base because they come with their specific problems and we're talking about that as opposed to going on an actual journey. What kind of began to shift was I had a couple of clients who actually began to complete their objectives in the executive coaching, executive leadership coaching sessions. And so, as kind of a final add-on, I asked them, if they would like to take a journey. And each one said yes. So there were just a few that this happened with, but, ultimately then we were able to tie the information that they received from the journey back into what they had been able to sort of achieve in terms of their goals and objectives relative to the actual coaching experience or the experience of being coached. And they found that incredibly valuable. And so, for instance, there was one entrepreneurial client who had left her position with a huge global organization, and she was doing consulting. She also had, the reason she had left in part was because she had a daughter who was entering school and she wanted to be able to be around and sort of engage with her more. And so she was trying to figure out how to balance all of that, you know, being a mother, being an entrepreneur, and being a wife. Mm-hmm. And the journey, she decided to go to Rotorua, and that journey really helped her see through the eyes of really 18th century women entrepreneurs, the Maori women, how she could sort of be in this collaboration with dynamic balance, that it didn't have to be one way or the other, that things could continue to move and change and shift, and she could be grounded in her own perspective in a way that allowed her to know that sometimes things would be busy and sometimes she could opt out of things being as busy as they were. Mm. Yeah, so that was really, you know, really, really quite helpful. And so that happened in a couple of instances with clients. And then an opportunity arose for me to do it was slightly different, you know, a sort of a team. It was a very high level senior team who all of the leaders were from different departments in this organization. And they had run into communications, you know, snafu where they had literally stopped talking to each other.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it was really. And so I was offered the opportunity to come in because I had facilitated some retreats for like one of the departments and I had done coaching, you know, in another area. So anyway, this basically high level person who, you know, from in HR asked me, you know, would I be interested in coming in and sort of facilitating the conversations that they needed to have, these very difficult conversations, and seeing if they could move beyond this impasse that they'd reached. And when I thought about that, I thought, whoa, let's see now, how am I going to set this up? Mm. Because they no longer felt safe with each other.
Oh.
Yeah. And so what I did was I did a whole series of things in terms of the standard sort of process. You know, I interviewed each one of them, found out what their stories are, so that they could feel heard, and also so that I could be really clear about where everybody was coming from. And then I sort of created it was kind of a PowerPoint-like document that was really sort of the results of that sort of team effectiveness evaluation. You know, so it was very streamlined, and it was with images and just, you know, bullets to really kind of bring home to them in a really simple way what wasn't working, why it wasn't working, and to be able to sort of aggregate all of those perspectives.
Right.
And then I had to travel to them to actually conduct these meetings. Mm-hmm. So there was this preparation and then sort of setting them up. And so at the meeting, I decided that what I would do is I would take them to Victoria Falls, one of the wisdom journeys, as in order for them to be in a place where they could have a conversation, you know, that the place would be different, mm-hmm. that it would also be a place of sort of natural power and dynamic change. And it would sort of serve as a container for them to really be able to shift the level of consciousness that they were in. And that sort of doing that, starting out the meeting with that and with images, literally talking them through what they were seeing and letting them have the experience of that, you know, we arrived at a place where they could then begin to have the real conversation that they needed.
Now, the journey itself, they were all together in a room?
Yes, yes. Okay. We were all together in a conference room, basically, where we had video capacity.
Normally you don't, this is pretty leading edge when it comes to the corporate environment. You don't find, I mean, I don't know, and you can comment on this, executives that are willing to go on journeys. I don't know what you called it, if you altered the name of it for this purpose. But to make that a palatable and safe experience so they didn't feel like, what's going on here? You know, this is too wild and crazy, right? How did you introduce that to them so they felt secure and comfortable enough within that setup to go through and for it to have a powerful impact?
Well, I told them when I'd had sort of one-on-one conversations with all of the team members, after hearing their stories and what they thought the problems were and what wasn't working for them. And I said to them that I was going to use the information they gave me to sort of inform what I would shape for them, and that what I could promise them was that I was going to actually provide an experience so that they could actually have these difficult conversations in a way that potentially could be productive. So that was really the focus, was, you know, we were there to have difficult conversations, and the objective was ultimately for them to end up in a better place than where they were. And so initially, the way that I didn't actually use the journeys as the centerpiece, I used the journeys as the doorway to get them to a place of safety so they could have the conversation. That was the difference. Mm. Yeah, so they had already bought into the fact that they really needed to have these conversations, even though there was a huge amount of trepidation.
Right.
And so this was really a way, what happens with the journeys is people see these images, and because, you know, I found out later that part of the reason these journeys work so well is because they tap into the brain in the way that actually gives people access to more of their brain power. Because they first are seeing images, that activates the right side of the brain. And then when I'm describing what they're seeing, those words activate the left side of the brain. And that sort of right to left connection then actually gives us greater access to more of our brain, just because of that sequencing. And fortunately, I mean, you know, years of sort of brain research has indicated that because the brain is fundamentally a story-making machine, when it sees images or when it's really keyed into images, for the brain, it doesn't matter that it's virtual. It's as if it's already happening. I mean, you know, the general sort of research that initially was done with runners. You can appreciate this, Lori. You know, that they would literally put a runner in the equivalent of kind of a lounge chair and hook all these electrodes up, and then they would tell them to to think about running the race.
Mm-hmm.
And the brain would literally fire the muscles that would be engaged if they were actually running the race.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Just from thinking about it, or did they show them images of it, or the course?
No,
or
anything? My understanding was that they were having, because these were actual, you know, these are runners who ran, mm-hmm. like you, they ran distances.
Mm-hmm.
So no, they asked them to just engage their own, you know, they were, usually this I think was in a case where they were going to be running their next race.
Right.
So they asked them to visualize their next race.
Hmm.
You know, which is often what athletes do. They know their routine, right? They know yeah. the path. They then visualize how they're going to perform.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah.
anticipate, you know, what they might encounter at various stages of the race.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't so much that their muscles were twitching, but rather that the sections of the brain that would normally control those muscles were activated by their internal images.
Yeah. Yeah. I know for me, I mean, just from personal experience, just thinking of my 50-mile race that I did this summer in New York, Finger Lakes area, that was really powerful for me. I did a lot of that visualization and thinking about different stages of the race and how I'd feel and, you know, what I might be able to pull out of my, you know, whatever out of the bag, right?
To
try at different stages. And so I'd mentally tried those things on before and in understanding that I might be really tired in some spots and how was I going to deal with that and things like that. And even affirmations or things that I thought of, you know, mantras and different things that I thought of and that I go or that I decide on before then and that I pull out for that. It really helped me to anchor that experience into something that I could manage. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and the other thing, you know, that makes these, and in this particular example that I'm using, made the journey to Victoria Falls so impactful was, luckily for me, none of them had been to Victoria Falls.
Right. Oh, great. Yeah.
And although I have used it with teams where one person has been and they're like, oh, I'm so glad to get a chance to go back, right?
Uh-huh. Kind of thing.
Yeah, but that automatically they're drawn right into that virtual space.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I mean, this is, we're talking really a power place, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and also the way they're led into the journeys, you know, they're the images of them landing at the airport. They're the images of them going to the lodge where they're going to leave their bags. And then there's the images of going to the Victoria Falls and seeing the entrance and then moving into that, forest, you know, which is basically, a rainforest mm-hmm. in the park there.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of seeing the falls from all of these sort of viewpoints, you know, the vantages, and then, you know, hearing the falls. I mean, there's sort of this whole sensory experience that then, and then sort of connecting the dots for them around how this is it's a place of natural power that is extremely dynamic and forceful and could be perceived as dangerous. And yet, you know, at the top of the falls, they see images of local men fishing, you know, in the Zambezi.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have all these sort of contrasts and complements that really enable them to have this feeling of sort of being in a different place. And what it does is it immediately sort of captures their curiosity and they become a little fascinated. So they kind of forget about whatever the anxiety they're thinking about.
Yeah. Right. So they're not even probably thinking about the problem or the, you know, the issue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. That's why they're so effective.
Mm.
Because the journeys don't focus you on the problem. Because it's like Einstein said, you can't solve a problem at the same level of consciousness that you created it.
Absolutely.
So what we do is we shift levels of consciousness on the journeys. And then we're no longer looking at the problem. We're only looking at possible options and solutions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it becomes really somewhat effortless, which is the truly surprising part and the fun part, I think.
Well, mm-hmm. it must have been interesting for you trying it within a group like that for a situation like that to see what sort of impact. I mean, you wouldn't know until it happened what kind of impact that could potentially have within a group setting for that sort of situation.
You know, that is so true, Lori. And for me, I have to say that's actually the fun of the journeys. Even though I know the journeys, I never know exactly what the journeys are going to reveal. Mm-hmm. And the reason that that's part of the reason I love the journeys in terms of doing them, because, you know, my basic mode of operation is exploration and discovery. You know, that's why I love to travel.
Yeah.
So even though I know about the groups or the teams, and often we have very sort of concrete, you know, objectives and specific, I'm looking at, I mean, I also bring tools and techniques that were on communication and listening and how you really engage in a meeting. So there are these sort of benchmarking pieces that are also part of what I'm sharing with them and what we're using as a framework in terms of having these difficult conversations. Mm-hmm. But the thrill is that the journeys will always surface something really significant, meaningful, and connective in a way that people don't typically or wouldn't typically even know to ask about.
Wow. That must have been really something for you to see, you know, what transpired, I guess, through the process of the experience, but then afterwards.
Yeah, I have to say it's really feels, on my end, it feels very fulfilling, because this was one of, after I did this particular really high level senior team, I ended up with another team of leaders where that was also what I call kind of a house on fire. And, you know, that ended up, it was, again, I took them to Victoria Falls. And the reason I typically use Victoria Falls is it's the shortest journey. Mm. So we met probably three different times, but initially our journey, you know, our meeting started out by us going to Victoria Falls. And then that took us into the tools and techniques and what wasn't working and what could work better. And, my contact in HR, who had actually recommended me for this other team where that had the house on fire, she decided that, you know, I work some kind of magic. You know?
Yeah.
I heard from somebody else she recommended. She said, well, she thinks you can work magic. I thought, oh, well, maybe the journeys work magic.
Right.
So, but it allows me to integrate all of my skill set in a way that really makes it, there's no resistance from the client.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no resistance.
Yeah, and then, I mean, some deeper work is going on too, whether they be conscious of that or not, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's wonderful.
And, you know.
Yeah, because, you know, there's that sort of like bringing consciousness into an environment that, well, there's certain prescribed ways of behaving, right? And not, you know, it's kind of hard to get out of the mold of that and to open things up to another form of communication, another way of relating and behaving. But business in itself is changing and the workplace is changing. And, you know, the fact that HR would ask you to come in and that you would do this and that people would respond and not be weirded out. And I mean, I'm sure you're presenting it in a way that doesn't seem, well, like you said, it just seems very practical and formulated towards providing a basic discussion solution around an issue that they have.
Right.
Yeah.
I have conducted a full-blown journey for team members.
Uh-huh.
But that was a case in which I'd actually facilitated for this team. I'd facilitated their retreat. So they knew me at that point.
Right.
And a select group of them, this was an international team, and the section of the team that was actually in New York, had on their own had taken that StrengthFinder 2.0
right.
Self-assessment. And they'd gotten these results and they were trying to figure out how, based on the results that they had, the various characteristics they each had, they were trying to figure out how they could work better together based on these results.
Oh.
And so they wanted to go on a journey to uncover how this could work better.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was really fun because that was a full blown journey. They went through the full experience, which is, you know, you actually do a pre-assessment, then I have a conversation with you about the specific result that you say you want, just to clarify, you know, to make sure that we're both very clear about what that result is. And then And then there, you know, they had their like three travel essentials. So they had their travel journal, they had their travel stone, they had their travel scent, and then for the journey itself. And then the journey actually was done virtually, not only virtually, but it was done via conference call.
Like for a group?
Yeah, it was a small team. The larger team. This was only the sort of the New York contingent. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was fewer people, you know, it wasn't like 20 or 30 people.
Yeah.
But they were basically in a conference room and looking at the monitor where they were seeing exactly the same images that I was seeing on my computer. Mm-hmm. And I was in my home office.
Okay, so my question to you, are these things becoming more mainstream then? That are people, you know, open to doing a conference call and having a stone and a scent? And I mean, you know, it's not like so.
I'd have to say very gradually. It's very selectively mainstream.
Right.
You know, because I just did one this month, but I was actually, it was for a team of about 14 people. Uh-huh. But I was there. It was physically, it was a client who's here in California, and I was actually at their site.
Right.
So it depends. It really is mainstream only relative to specific clients, I would say.
Right. And then probably you have a certain relationship with that client, so they are familiar with your work in other ways and other aspects.
Exactly.
Before you get to this deeper work, I'd imagine, right? It's deeper work.
Exactly. So these are clients really who know me and have worked with me in some cases for years.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just so interesting how 5 years ago you were looking for what is the application for this, right? Are these just individual entrepreneurs and what are they doing? And now you kind of found this path of integration. And how did you come upon that? I know you said that, you know, it just was sort of organic, right? You had some existing clients and they were in a program and then you thought we'll just kind of tie this in at the end. What gave you the idea to do that? What inspired you to do that, to see that as a possibility?
I think because when I looked at the initial opportunities, what really prompted me was the fact that these challenges, the situations, the opportunities that came to me were really significant challenges around communication and leadership. And the folks in the room were really high-level people, and there were a whole series of power dynamics going on, and it was a really complex kind of picture. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was not going to be easy to kind of cut through that.
Yeah.
So I realized I needed something that was going to really be coming from a very different direction. Mm-hmm. You know, that in some ways they hadn't experienced, and therefore I could tap into a level of receptivity without them before they actually realized what was happening. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, because the situation had, you know, these were house on fire situations. They had gotten to that point.
Yeah.
and they were also, because they were so senior, I mean, these were all C-suite execs who were, you know, in charge of their own domains kind of in the organization. So I realized that by inserting the experience of the journey on the front end, I could use it as a container for what I was presenting on the back end in terms of what needed to shift, in terms of the tools and the techniques and, you know, the communication and the listening skills that needed to be, if you will, sort of ratcheted up.
Okay, this is interesting. Now, the question's coming to me now. I mean, it's like your work just naturally evolved. The situation appeared where it was like, oh, this would be the perfect tool. And I hadn't considered that before for this audience, but now the situation demands it. But the question that's coming to me, was there something inside of you that shifted so that you could, on the outside, find the opportunity to use that work?
Well, you know, that's a good point. And I would have to agree with you. I hadn't really thought about it so much from that perspective. Because at the time I was so looking at this freaking opportunity, right? Trying to figure out how it was going to work.
Yeah.
You know, but I think you may be right. I think, and if I track it back, the thing that I'm seeing is, you know, I'd attempted to do a series of like teleclasses, introductory teleclasses, to kind of expose entrepreneurs to the journeys and to try to get clients that way.
Yep.
And I did make, I remember it was the fall of the year. I remember it was like September. I decided that that really wasn't going to work for me. Mm-hmm. The whole thing just, I realized that it just wasn't, it wasn't working actually for the journeys because they were so powerful that folks, even in the introductory teleclass, would get so much out of it, they didn't feel like they needed to be a client.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know and that. Just, I know that well.
You know that one, right?
Yes. Okay, one session, I'm
I know
done.
You've been there.
It's good. That'll last me another 5 years. I'm good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
and you know, I also realized that that way of marketing didn't really suit me, you know, so, that I sort of engage more with people for at a personal level. And it's all about, for me, it's kind of about receiving the invitation. Right. So I made that decision even without knowing what I was going to do with the journeys. I made the decision to stop doing the teleclasses and to not try to promote the journeys as an online, you know, through online marketing.
Yep.
And that seemed to create some kind of space for a shift. And that shift actually took me back into sort of the larger kind of global organization world. I got, I think, called in to do a big retreat, you know, to facilitate a retreat. And things just started shifting in a slightly different direction for me in general in terms of my work. And then I decided the other thing I would do was I would take myself on one of my newest, at that time, my newest journey. Mm-hmm. I just put together Istanbul, and I would see what the journeys had to say to me.
Oh, wow.
And that was kind of hilarious, actually, Laurie, because I took myself through the entire experience. I did the pre-assessment, you know, all the way to the post-assessment. I did all the little pieces to make sure there was complete integrity. And I had formulated my question. And of course, normally the journeys always answer the question that you ask, and then they give you the real question that you didn't know to ask, right? Mm-hmm. The answer to the real question. Mm-hmm. In my case, the journey did not answer my question. Instead, it just gave me this kind of one-liner, and I had no idea what the journey was talking about.
Wow. Wow.
Now that I look back, it was kind of hilarious, truthfully. And fortunately for me, a dear friend and colleague of mine had been on two of the journeys, and she's very psychic. I called her up and said, listen, I need help. This is what I got. What do you think it means? And she really helped me. She clarified what it was about. But what the journeys essentially said to me at that point was, the one-liner was, stand in the mystery. That was it. That was the complete message, right?
Right.
And I didn't really know how to translate that. I'm thinking, I'm looking at this from a business perspective, from a marketing perspective. I'm like, what?
Yeah. What are you going to do with that?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I think that that ultimately is the shift that you may be describing, that by letting go of this other way to try to get clients, by sort of then realizing there were other opportunities that sort of entered that space. And then by working with clients in that and those opportunities, then the next unfolding presented itself. And ultimately, as long as I stood in the mystery, then the journeys, you know, would support me.
Okay. Now that's interesting. I mean, it's a process about really sort of creating things, but not from a push perspective, but more of a place of receptivity, right? Which is essentially what that work is about, right? That it's very experiential and it's about receiving.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Wow. That's, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's really amazing.
Yeah. So now are you pretty much doing this within the context of your organizational group work, or Do you still have the one-on-one class? I'm just considering people that are listening to this call, and if there's any way for them to make use of that tool in some way, for to experience that, do you have something like that for them?
Yes, I still take individuals on the one-on-one journeys if they, you know, if that's something that they want. The key is that everybody who's done that has gotten incredibly valuable information, and the feedback I get from that is, we're talking about folks, you know, everybody who's decided they're going to reconfigure their business to somebody who's literally already, you know, on their third six-figure business, you know. And the thing that I hear that I think is really most powerful in some ways about that is, a client said to me, you know, Sylvia, it's been 3 years since I went on the journey, and I just want to tell you, it's still delivering. I'm still getting information and still supporting me.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how deep the journeys are, because they really, they go to the essence of our being, you know, and then sort of bring back what we need to, if you will, sort of connect the dots in the practical experiences that we're having. I just, this last journey I did was really fun because with this team, because it actually was a journey, for the team into thought leadership. Yeah. And I realized, boy, I'd really love to do more of those individually and with teams, because it's just, you know, it's amazing. I mean, truthfully, I had so much fun connecting the dots. You know, yeah, because it just, it really just lifts everybody's game in a way that, you know, there's no struggle involved. And, you know, it's fun and fascinating and energizing and, you know, awakens all these other sort of perspectives. You know, it's kind of the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. It makes me think of, you know, just one area of the company that I've had some interaction with recently that focuses on sort of providing a game type scenario, right? Through like, you know, electronic medium and then some role playing and that sort of thing, right? And they use that for change and innovation.
Yes.
Yeah, and it seems to me that this work would be a perfect sort of arena for that. You know, the companies are very challenged these days to stay, well, I guess, you know, to innovate, right? And to create new ways of doing business and new products, but not so much products that are just developed according to whatever their specialty is and whatever, you know, the technical people might be excited about, but are really come from marketplace, right? From the needs of their clients, right? So it's just, it's occurred to me right now, it would be really interesting to see what that would have if you had it in sort of a setting where you had clients and then, you know, a company, that sort of thing, right? You know, how that could work, right?
That would be very, very interesting.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see the kinds of things that, because, you know, the old ways are the old ways. And, you found a way to introduce things that might not be, they're more leading edge. Right? They're more leading edge and not the tried and true, but different and it's really demanded in business today, right? Is to think differently and to consider things differently than we have before. We're evolving.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and the reality is, you know, that all this stuff that we're doing in business and leadership, it is at a certain level improv.
It is, right? It's a matter of, like, you know, how to be comfortable within that.
That's precisely right. Yeah. And really, that's the other big key, is how are you comfortable with the unknown? You know, and that's certainly what the journeys have in spades, right? They offer in spades.
The experience of the unknown and then how somebody responds within that.
Yes.
So to, I guess, access parts of themselves that they didn't even know were there, that, you know, in a certain situation, they would, their mind would be like trying to, you know, go around in circles and try to find a solution to, whereas there's a deep sort of reserve of resources that is available to all of us. It's a matter of how do we access that in the moment we need it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you think the journeys themselves allow people to become more familiar with that capacity within themselves so they are able to respond differently in real life situations to the challenges that they face?
Well, the reality is that that's probably a yes and a no answer. The journeys connect people to something that's much deeper within themselves, even without them necessarily being aware of it. Mm-hmm. That what I also, certainly at least in working with teams as well as individuals, the piece that I add is I'm looking for where are the sort of practical ways that they can apply the information that they get, and how do those practices actually link them to the objectives or the goals they're trying to achieve.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because a lot of it is, it's nice to have that experience. So what do I do with that afterwards?
Yes. Yes, there's that. And also, you know, particularly in Western culture, in fact, this was interesting. I had a client talk about this. In Western culture, this was someone who came from the Eastern European world, but had been educated in the West at like Harvard or someplace and worked all over the freaking world. Mm-hmm. And he said that, he really realized that in the Eastern culture, in the Eastern world, that there's a whole symbolic language that is sort of naturally utilized. And that that's not typically the way that Westerners function. Mm. And so, you know, that was actually, I thought, very, very insightful of him, because part of the reason the journeys are so effective is they actually use symbolic language, which really kind of gets to the root of who we are, right? Mm-hmm. To show us what we're not only looking at, but what we're actually looking for. Mm. Mm. What we're really seeking. Mm. And the various levels of that, you know, that, yes, I know you said you wanted, you know, this objective to, I mean, I'm thinking of one entrepreneurial client who said, you know, she wanted to figure out a way how to bring more of a spiritual aspect into her very, you know, rational business.
Yeah.
And the journeys, basically, she went to Machu Picchu, and the journey basically gave her literally a three-step process for any decision she would make going forward, whether it was in business, leadership, or life. And it was just, you know, so clear and clean. She started laughing. I mean, she started saying, well, you know me, Sylvie. You know I asked, okay, how do I do that? Mm-hmm. And the journeys just told us, you know, boom, you know.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So very practical. And so a tool that she could use going forward in every aspect of her work.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. Yeah.
Incredible.
You know? Yeah. So and the other thing is, you know, the one thing I would say about the journeys for anybody who's interested is, the only thing you need to bring, obviously, there's a natural curiosity that they invoke. And the only thing that clients, to get the best out of the journey, is they need to bring a sense of real openness, because the journeys really will reveal the deeper meaning or the deeper message or the deeper. Yes, they'll address whatever you bring to them. And because they are of the mystery, they will actually reveal what really is at sort of the depths of that. And that's why they have the longevity in terms of, you know, folks being able to go back to that information over time and see how it makes sense.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a information page about that, about the journey itself? And for people that might want to check that out, I can link to that from the interview.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. If they go to wildwisdomjourneys.com.
Okay. And then from there, if they're interested, they can just contact you. I assume there's a contact
Absolutely.
Link, right? Okay.
Yes.
I'm wondering if there's anything else we need to talk about. I mean, the journeys just seemed like the logical or the place that, you know, when I considered where we were, you know, what was happening. And I don't even know if I knew that you're doing this in a corporate setting. That's amazing.
Right. Yes. Yes.
That's just amazing.
Well, no, I don't think so. I think that sometimes people are curious as to where, you know, the journeys go.
Yeah.
We know there's Victoria Falls, which is the short journey. The other journeys tend to be longer. So there's, like I said, there's Istanbul, there's Machu Picchu, there's the Maasai Mara in Kenya, there's Rotorua in New Zealand, there's Chichen Itza in Mexico. There are about 4 or 5 cities in Italy. And the most recent one, which, I completed just a little while ago and it's not quite posted on the site yet, is actually Angkor Wat in, Cambodia.
And these are all places that you've experienced yourself in your travels, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So you've had the physical embodied experience of going to these places that it somehow helped you to translate what that was into a virtual format and share that with people.
Yes, although I would have to say with the exception of Chichen Itza, which I had not been to, but a client who wanted to go on a journey had been there, wanted to return, and I told her if I could get photographs and put together a photo playbook, she could take me on the journey.
Hmm.
And she did. And then I had a client who wanted to go to Chichen Itza. So once you take me on the journey, then I could take anybody else, right?
Right.
So I took him and he had this, I mean, really kind of life-changing experience there.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes. So, and the same thing, the Italy journey, I've been to Rome, but, it also includes, I think, Pisa and Milan and, Florence,
mm-hmm.
cities I'd not been to, but again, that was a client who had been there, wanted to go back. And so I said, give me the cities if I can get the photographs and put together the photo playbook. And she took me to the other cities, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. But, but the other ones are all places, typically they're all places that I've been, but you know, if a client has been somewhere where I have not, then the way that we experience the journey is I have them guide me through, I get, you know, find out what places they've been to, put together the photo playbook, and then I have them guide me through the images.
Right. So that could work for people that were really impacted by a certain place and would like
yes.
to return there, maybe not physically, but just in essence, in order to, I guess, you know, just provide them with the opportunity to experience that consciousness again.
Yeah. And in the case of the client, for example, the one who was in Chichen Itza, she said, you know, I was there 25 years ago. I never unpacked that journey. That, you know, that she got all this great information. She said, this is just amazing.
Wow.
You know,
so to process
yeah.
the experience.
Yeah. She said, I didn't necessarily even have anybody to talk to about it in this way. And I didn't even necessarily know to talk to it about it in this way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yes.
Wow.
Yeah. That's an option.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, interesting. The journey has taken you on an interesting journey, all these journeys, right?
It's true. It's really, it's really true.
In places you didn't expect, right? Surrender to the
yes.
mystery, right?
Yeah. So, you know, the stand in the mystery is, obviously
stand
that was the message, right?
Stand in the mystery. It
yes.
is. That's it. That's
yes.
That's the essence of it. Really.
We'll do the rest. You just stand in the mystery.
Yeah. Do you think that
by
allowing yourself in that, I don't know, when did you do that? When did you get that message? How long ago was that?
It's been a couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah. It's been a couple of years.
And has all this sort of accelerated?
It's been gradual. Mm-hmm. You know, it just has, you said earlier about kind of the unfolding, and it really has been a kind of unfolding.
Mm.
You know, I think that, I guess the thing I would say about that is we often have this notion that things should take off like wildfire.
Yeah.
And it's not that they don't, but I think we may not appreciate what kind of, at least in terms of our concept of time, what kind of time might be involved for something to get to a place where it can take off like wildfire.
Okay. That's, I think that's a valuable thing to explore and talk about for, with people, because, you know, so much of the online world that a lot of us inhabit is about that sort of instant gratification, getting the answers right away, right? Googling, yes, and finding the answer and being able to make your next move. And then this sort of expectation of immediacy for things to work out. And how do we, you know, and then maybe even the feeling like, well, if it didn't work out, then I have to give it up because it wasn't meant to be.
Yes.
How do exactly. we know? How do we play around in that? How do we know when it's time to stick with something, when to surrender that, when to kind of put it on the shelf, when to revisit? How does that experience, how has it worked for you effectively? How would you guide people into that for themselves? Like if they're exploring something and then they haven't got the results that they're seeking, and you know, what are they going to do with that? Are they going to just forget about it and go in another direction? How to navigate through that? What are your best recommendations for that?
Well, it's interesting. I think it I think in many ways sort of my experience of the journey models kind of how to move through it, in that you have to first recognize that you're actually in this, in a mode of exploration and discovery. Mm-hmm. And when you're exploring something, well, let me put it, you're first in exploration. So the whole point of exploring something is to discover something. It's not necessarily to get to the end, a specific endpoint. Mm-hmm. So in that exploration, you're kind of testing different things to see what works and what doesn't, and to get a sense of why some stuff works and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. And you have to be really candid with yourself and kind of clear about, is this not working because it's not matching up with me? You know, because a lot of times we see other people doing the same thing and it's working for them, right?
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So we think, well, either we have a bad idea or something, but maybe it's not working for us. Like in my case, it wasn't working for me because I'd selected the wrong way of trying to make it work. Mm. You know, it was a way that wasn't really my way, or it wasn't sort of in sync with my way.
Right.
And I didn't even realize it, mm-hmm, until I finally just got to the point of realizing, you know, this isn't going to really work this way. So I had to kind of pause.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key, is that we have to periodically pause and really be willing to ask the questions about, you know, well, what's really going on here? Mm-hmm. And you know, what's working, what's not working, and why is it not working? And what potentially could work better, which is still, still has us in this sort of exploration and experimentation mode, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we have to take what we discover from that, you know, and sometimes it's just a little hint. It's not a real big firecracker moment, you know?
Yeah. Right. The commandment is coming, it's landing, and you're writing it down. And
right, exactly. Clear, you know, it may be something that looks pretty normal, you
right,
know?
Right,
yeah. You know, I decided not to do the any more of the online marketing, you know, and there was a space, and the next thing I knew, I had this opportunity to facilitate a retreat. Well, you wouldn't necessarily connect those dots then to the journey, because I wasn't going to take the people at the retreat on a journey, right?
Well, no.
But in order to do the retreat, I had to go on a physical journey. The retreat was in Istanbul.
Right. Wow. Wow. Wonderful.
Yeah. So, you know, then you start, you have to, this is what I mean about symbolic language. You know, you have to start looking at sort of the symbolism of what you're actually experiencing. Mm. Oh, wait a minute. I'm actually going to be going on a journey to do this work. So maybe it's not totally divorced from the journeys, even though I'm not doing a journey. So let me just notice what's happening. And that's the real key, is to notice. You know, no judgment, no expectations, just kind of notice. Mm-hmm. And then notice where there might be some connections. Mm. Yeah. And then, you know, that noticing has you in the mode of kind of being open to possibilities when they show up. Mm. You know, and you know, then, you know, you're still having conversations about what you're doing, you know, you're getting input from people about what you're doing, but you're just kind of looking for little openings. Mm. You know, and you know, could this work for you? You want to try this out? You know, in this setting, this is. And my thing was to see, which is why I started, when I found that clients might have hours at the end of their you know, what they'd signed up for me in terms of coaching. They had remaining hours and they pretty much achieved what we set out to achieve. My thing was, you know, what could be a real meaningful and productive way for them to utilize this remaining time with me? And I thought, oh, well, why don't I just, you know, these journeys are sitting over here. Why don't I offer them that and see what they think?
Yeah. That's really neat.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when you're describing that process about just being open to the possibilities and looking for the hints, it seems like in that process is you're in a space of curiosity. You're not in a space of pushing an agenda or expectation.
Yeah, that is so true. I mean, curiosity is invaluable.
Yeah.
Because it allows you to ask the questions without having to have a specific answer.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know what people are, you know, the response you're going to get could lead you to the next piece.
Mm-hmm. So it's funny, like in really allowing ourselves to not know the answer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because that actually is the point of the journey, not knowing the answer.
Wow.
There'd be no reason to go on the journey.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, which is why I say, you know, it's really about exploration and discovery. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like you can discover wondrous things.
Yeah. How do you find that people relate once they get into that sort of mode and the journey takes them into that possibility in behaving in a business setting? How do you notice the behavior shifting? What do you see happening with people in how they relate to each other?
Well, because they then have some, you know, they have another sense of the way in which they're connected, you know, and, you know, they can even, from a fun perspective, they can use some of the images from the journey, you know, as kind of anchor points for, you know, for engagement with each other. This thought leadership journey that I took folks on, one of the things that came out for a number of the team members was this whole thing about being in Devil's Pool, which is this place at the top of Victoria Falls that at low water you can actually sit in, and the water's crashing over the side, but you're actually in a little concentrated pool, right?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, not exactly something I would do, but but nonetheless, yeah. There are people. I mean, guides, you have to have a guide, or you can't just randomly do this, right?
Yeah.
But that image had a lot of meaning for this team, because as thought leaders, they're dealing with constant change, and they're, talk about the leading edge, they're basically not only on the leading edge, they're often creating the leading edge,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that then, you know, just saying, you know, when they're in a moment, either with a client or with other team members, when they've run into challenges or they're not sure which way to go, and, you know, to be able to say to each other, you know, maybe when you just pause for a moment and just be still in Devil's Pool. Because we know that the thing about Devil's Pool is that the Zambezi is flowing into Devil's Pool, but when it leaves Devil's Pool, it's dropping 355 feet over this open chasm. Yeah, so, you know, it's this notion of how do you hold, you talked about innovation and creativity. Well, the thing you have to be able to hold is you have to be able to hold paradox if you're really going to be innovative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to hold really the sort of what in the status quo is not working, you know, the creative tension of how that needs to change, and then whatever the possibilities are that you're not even sure of yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this whole thing about being able to use the symbolic language as anchors for bringing yourself back to a place of inner calm that allows you to see more clearly is really critical.
Mm-hmm.
And valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very useful.
Yeah.
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 Because, you know, we're visual beings, so, you know,
So they have a different experience, I guess, through the journey. Like you said, these anchor points are these images, and, you know, they can draw from them in real life, right? Because it's just symbolic, right? It's symbolic.
Exactly.
And so they have that experience that they can translate into other experiences and find, you know, how do I navigate that within that sort of context?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it can bring you, because we're talking about places in nature, you know, in the case of Victoria Falls or even in the other places, we're talking about these iconic sort of places where there's this kind of resonant energy, really, that's very specific. You know, it can keep you, you know, it can put you in touch with, once you become more aware of that, that awareness expands. So, you know, even if you're just, you know, out by the beach, you know, watching the water come in.
Yeah.
You know, that can have an impact on you that it didn't have before, because you're coming to that from a higher state of consciousness. You know, it's like people say they get their best ideas in the shower, right?
Absolutely.
No accident.
No, there's absolutely no accident. And the flow state, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah absolutely. Yeah. It's so interesting. It's kind of blowing my mind right now. I'm kind of like in the, I'm in the water, I'm in the waterfall. I'm in the devil's pool, you know?
Right, exactly.
Just looking at it from a different point of view and feeling the water rush over, and wow, that's something else. Wow, that's so interesting. It's like just in talking about the journeys, I'm going on a journey.
Oh, I love it. Well, you see then how effective they are, right?
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah, they're powerful. They definitely come with their own sort of beingness, I guess is what I would call it. It's not stepping into the journeys. These wisdom journeys is really, they're actually doorways into being. That's the message I got from them.
Doorways into being.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
With a big B.
Yeah. Yeah. Experiencing yourself in ways you didn't even really know that you had. I mean, experiencing aspects of yourself that you might not otherwise have a chance to experience.
Precisely. Yes. Yeah.
And then bringing more of yourself into whatever situation, you know, whatever situation you're in, you're bringing more of yourself into it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I would say what they really do is they invite you to step into the fullness of who you are in ways that you had not previously imagined.
Wonderful. I think on that note, I think we have to close it down.
All right.
I don't know if there's much more to say. I feel so complete now.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah. I really do. Thank you for sharing the magnificence of the journey and the power of the journey with us here today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's just, you know, they're a joy to talk about. I mean, they're a joy to have people experience, you know. I'm just grateful that they have chosen me to stand in the mystery.
Well, that's it, right?
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Leaders Call to Adventure with Sylvia Warren. For show notes, you can go to my website, leaderscalltoadventure.com/6, and that's number 6. And there I include a link to the Wild Wisdom Journeys website and some other details. I hope you had some good takeaways and aha moments, and were led on your own journey in listening to the conversation we had today. Remember, stand in the mystery. Until next time.